that you fall asleep on me.
Hello and welcome to Political Brothers with your host, Chauncey, and new host, Anthony. Folks, I know we've been on hiatus for the last few months, and that was just because Avery and I were doing a little bit of soul searching, and we've realized that Avery has a lot of commitments with his education and trying to become the best doctor slash scientist and medical professional there is. So with a heavy heart, for the meantime at least, he is no longer going to be with the Political Brothers, but you still got me, and you got our brand new co-star, Anthony, who's going to be with us for now on. And basically, Anthony and I can still do politics, but we're also going to be talking about EV work on the side, because we're both electric vehicle owners. So there's a lot of different things that Anthony's going to bring to the show and to several other different podcasts that we decided to do on the side as well. So, Anthony, that being said, say hi to everybody.
Hey, how you doing, guys? As Chauncey said, my name is Anthony. I've actually listened to the show before. I think I take more of the side of Avery than I do with Chauncey. We do argue, or we actually debate a lot about things that we agree and disagree on, but we always keep it professional. We might disagree, but we have fun in the process. The whole thing about this show is about getting your opinions out there and making yourself being heard. And I'm looking forward to this show and hopefully taking off.
No, most certainly. And Anthony, couldn't have said it better myself. The left tends to be quite dramatic.
Well, but, long.
but basically, what we're going to first be talking about is the demise of the Kamala Harris campaign in what was a unexpected second term of Donald Trump, as he
said that again,
win the presidential election of 2024, which a lot of us didn't expect to happen. But when you look into the data and everything, it's really unsurprising. Just because, for example, Anthony, you and I spoke off camera, and what we were talking about was simply the trend of the woke movement. Woke for the last 4 years was the most important thing. Woke this, woke that, pronouns, funding foreign wars. And it's just crazy to me how, from what I see, is that instead of listening to the American people like the left was thinking they were, you had the working class Americans that, once again, what we like, similar to what we saw in 2016, they voted for someone that was very pro-America, pro-American, pro-working class. And that's why we saw the Great Blue Wall disintegrate and why Georgia went back to red and several other states go back to red. And even when you look at the Senate and Congress, those went back to red. Congress stayed red, but the Senate definitely went red. So it's just quite crazy to see. So from someone from a left, who's left-leaning, my question to you is, Anthony, is what are your thoughts? Should your party have won after what happened the last 4 years of the Joe Biden administration? Did Kamala Harris show enough for votes? Like, why did the left lose power entirely in all three stages?
The biggest problem that we have is that Joe Biden actually ran for president first, for the second term. He unfortunately was, it was time for him to actually retire as opposed to just taking the approach of running for president. At his age, and keep this in mind, Trump's age is also a factor. At his age, he should have released or relinquished his title to the next best available person, instead of actually running and giving up his seat to Kamala at the last minute, which a lot of people didn't like. So if Joe Biden actually stepped down before, in the sense of not running, I think we would have had a better shot on winning. Now, this red wave that you're talking about, it wasn't really a blowaway vote. If you think about it, Donald Trump won 77 million votes and Kamala Harris won 74 million votes. That's only off by 3 million. It wasn't as big as before when Joe Biden actually beat Trump. We do have a lot of ideologies that don't make sense and we have to wake up. But I'm also saying that the red side or the Republican side is not always entirely being honest to the American people. And they have their own faults as well.
So that's a good point, Anthony. But what I really was trying to say was, like, how do we build off? Because even some Democratic leaders, they're taking more incentive. Like the young senator from the Bronx, all of a sudden she removed her pronouns from, for example, her Instagram and Twitter that listed she was a she, her. So do you think the left is automatically saying, oh, shoot, you know, this is why are we focusing on stupid things such as pronouns and things of that nature, then instead of addressing our constituents? Because even Bernie Sanders came out, and mind you, even though he is independent, he is very left-leaning with his democratic socialist views, and even he called out the left and says, hey, you're supposed to be the shy, you're supposed to be screaming freedom of speech, freedom of who you want to be, freedom of everything, but lately, it's not in the media, which has been very left-leaning, you must admit. Especially last over 8 years. But even you have to admit that when CNN anchors were there on the night of the election, they were like, yeah, we could see where Harris is losing. And why? We could see why. We can understand why. And right now, even now, the DNC is wondering, who the hell is supposed to be next? So my question to you would be, if Biden took the honorable route and said, hey, folks, I am old, I am tired, I am not going to run as an incumbent against Trump and do a Biden-Trump round two, who would have been the most, in your opinion, the most prime candidate to represent the Democratic Party?
There's actually a few people that would have been a good choice. The governor of Pennsylvania would have been a good choice. I lost my train of thought with his name. Gavin Newsom from California would have been a great person. But you have two very intelligent individuals that actually can speak their mind without losing a train of thought and very passionate about what they do. So those are my two people that I would think of. Even Akeem Jeffries eventually might be a good candidate for a presidential run.
I will say this. Newsom is quite an interesting candidate. Why Newsom? Just because, as we see with California, the growing trend of California is everyone's not trying to move there. They're trying to get the hell out of there just because of rising costs, crime, et cetera. So why is Newsom to you someone that would have made a great Democratic candidate, for, especially for president of the United States?
Just think about it. He's really one of the biggest states in the country. Similar to New York, the biggest GDP that there is out there. We dictate the country's income. And once again, the GDP for the country. When you look at Gavin Newsom, he's very decisive. He knows exactly what he wants to say. He knows what he wants to get accomplished. The problem with the state of California, it's straight down the line. It's red and blue. There's a lot more blue in the heavily populated areas like Los Angeles and San Francisco. But when you go deep into the states, it's more red because easier for Trump to get those points. Those election votes. But I think that he has the right idea. I think he's putting the country ahead first. I think he has the right idea for environmental protection. I believe that he knows how to conserve, not go drilling everywhere in California, or even though they don't drill much, it doesn't, I think they have a better understanding of how to run an economy. New York does as well, but I think he has the approach. I think he has the ability to speak his mind and get his thought across.
So, not to cut you off there, but you keep referencing New York. Who in New York, quite frankly?
I'm talking about GDP, and I'm not talking about the person who's running it.
Okay, I got you. Okay, thank you for the clarification there. Because I was about to say,
I did say GDP. Is it similar to New York? Is it a similar state?
It's just, despite us having a felon for a mayor.
But we have a felon for a president. And we have a felon coming in as a president.
Yes, which you all know was politically motivated. And Trump took the high route.
Once again.
The high road in 2016.
Hillary Clinton. Just remember that in New York State, it was a jury of his peers that actually convicted him. It wasn't the Democrats. It wasn't the Republicans. It was the peers, the American people who voted, Republicans and Democrats. They said he
was. You have to agree, and we're interrupting each other right now, which, folks, just so you know, one big thing that I am known for is interrupting. And as you can see, Mr. Anthony over here was the one who interrupted.
Well, excuse me.
Now, excuse you is right. But the fact is this, even regardless of what the end result was, the fact is this, there was no crime committed, because even the bank that was quote-unquote the fraud was committed against was like, sure, Mr. Trump paid his debt to us and we'll love to do business with him in the future.
I'm a little confused. The taxpayers' money that he swindled away, he filed for bankruptcy 7 times. What? I'm a little confused.
I'm confused.
this is what you want to talk about, right? Let's talk about this. Here goes a man who's not only been convicted of sexual harassment of a woman, okay, but he was also found for running businesses into his ground and not paying his creditors. I'm like, come on, seriously? We can go one way, but we can't go the other way?
No, I'm not going to disagree with you there. but we'll definitely go into that more in the next episode, because I don't want to, because you and I could go back and forth on this. So just so you guys know, folks, the next episode is going to be Trump. I mean, convicted felon or politically targeted victim. That's what the next episode is going to be about.
We'll definitely talk about that.
Even though development at this point, since he is now elected the president-elect for the 2024 election, which I'm going to bring up something that is, once again, going to hurt the left and hurt the legacy of the Joe Biden era, which was the countless amount of times that he said Hunter Biden was going to, whatever the jury of his peers stated, that he was going to let it go and let his son serve the justice that was upon him, which was done. He was convicted, should have served some time, but unfortunately his father did pardon him. After stating numerous times, I am not going to pardon him. And now he's going to pardon him.
So let's play devil's advocate here. Uh-huh. So yes, he did pardon his son. And I can understand why. Here goes a man, Mr. Trump over here, who not only says that he's going to release everybody that was wrongly convicted on January 6th, but he also pardoned Jared Kushner's father. Now, that's a family member, isn't that correct?
No, you're right.
Okay, so why are we harping on one side and not the other? If it's good for the geese, it's good for the goose.
Both left, whatever political party you're with, they are people that, pardon my French, but they're full of shit. It's both political parties are redundant, and they say one thing and mean another, or do another. I'm not disagreeing with you there. All I'm saying is that the left, the Joe Biden, the one that said, basically said Trump was, if you want to talk Star Wars terminology to make this fun, Darth Vader, Sith Lords, that was the Republican Party, and then the left was the Jedi Knight Yoda come to save the day to bring back America's freedom, bring back the soul of, save the soul of America, was what Joe Biden shouted from to the rooftops.
So you're disagreeing that Joe Biden didn't do well for America, that all the middle-class Americans that have these jobs are not prospering because of Joe Biden? Because if I remember correctly, Trump did not.
So we're not talking about economics. We're not talking about economics. We're talking about the basis that the left was supposed to save the soul of America. They were supposed to be the party that leads by example.
Oh, so you want to make the morals. Let's talk about morals.
Yeah, the plotting of morality.
It is a plotting of morality. I absolutely agree with you. Even though he does make a mistake and he is human.
I'll bring this up right now. Even though everyone forgets, the Republican Party freed and essentially ended slavery. It was the left and the Dixiecrats and the Democrats that wanted slavery, and they said it was a state rights issue. And then the Dixiecrats went against Martin Luther King. And
let's not go back in time and talk about history. Let's talk about current affairs right now.
I know. Because
you're really stretching here. You know that, right? You're really stretching.
I don't know how I'm stretching.
But listen, the party that we're looking at right now, whether it's the Democrat or Republican, and let's talk about the Republican Party right now, who talks about freedom, and making sure that we have jobs for people, and we want to spend less and not more. But yet we take every single billionaire that exists in America, put him into a position of power who are absolutely going to do nothing for the American people. So the morale of this country is going to go down eventually. So when these people get into this office, let's see how well they do. Because I really do disagree that they're going to do beneficial things. I think they're going to do great for themselves, but I don't think they're going to do great for the American people.
Let's remember this billionaires on both sides. But I'm glad you brought up Trump's cabinet. So, because I know you and I spoke about this, one about the Doge, Department of Government Efficiency, which I'm excited to see what they do. As you all know, folks, the Department of Government Efficiency, headed by Elon Musk and Ramaswamy, they are not able to do anything but advise the president. That is the job. They're not making decisions. Basically, they say, Mr. President Trump, this is what we believe you should do. Take it or leave it.
Wait a second. You're saying only two people?
They are is advisors.
So you're saying that only these two people are going to make all the calls in America on how we're going to be efficient? Okay. Like, so they're going to create...
I'm going to bring up what we talked about. For example, what was it? Ramaswamy?
He called me every morning. Who cares?
There was a CNN report that came out earlier today that stated that some of the Biden administration's government loans they're looking into, and one of them was $1 billion loan to Rivian, which is one of them that he wants to pull that back. You and I stated that, and we were agreement on it, that we believe that shouldn't be taken pulled back. Because of two things. One, it's money to finance a plant to be manufactured and built in Georgia, which will provide approximately $7,500 jobs to Georgians, which is great because American taxpayer money is being used to create American goods and American jobs. We also saw that Elon Musk got a similar deal, not as much. I think it was like $500 million, $423 million, something like that, in a loan in 2010. And he paid it back in full in 2013, 10 years ahead of schedule, which we're hoping that Rivian does the same thing. But I agree. That's why I'm putting the statement on that, yes, these are just their advisors. They're not making any decisions. They can't be like, oh, yes, Trump, we cut this and this and this and this. No, at the end of the day, things have to be approved by Congress. Things have to be approved by the Senate. And we have the three branches of government. So it's not like Trump is going to be a dictator and do whatever he wants. He can't.
So let me just add to that really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about loaning money to American companies so they actually can grow and develop. Yes, Tesla did receive the money. Yes, they did pay it back. But because of that money, their company is flourishing right now. And I think Rivian has the same opportunity to make that happen. Now, with this whole Department of DOGE, it's in the word. If this is not about Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, telling them how they can be more efficient, it's in the title, Department of Government Efficiency. We're opening up another part of a department, hiring people to analyze how the government is working and spending money and how they can come back. So yes, Congress has the person, they dictate what goes on with the country and how they spend the money. But I'm telling you right now, this DOGE will blow up in our face because they're gonna cut programs that shouldn't be cut. And you're gonna see that within the first 2 years.
Once again, to reiterate, they cannot cut anything. They cannot make any decisions. The only thing they can do is gather data and present it to the President of the United States as well as Congress and the Senate. The thing, like, but the thing that I'm hoping is that we can see what transpires from the Department of Government Efficiency. Now, but I will agree with you that, yes, we have Senate committees and House committees that are all assigned to this. I feel, once again, Trump is not a conventional president. He's not a conventional individual.
For sure.
He is not a career politician. And as we're seeing with his new cabinet, which, yes, I will agree, they are loyalists, but many of them are not career anything in politics.
And that doesn't bother you?
Oh, what I'm saying is that, see, here's the thing, and I'll tell you the same thing that I'll tell everybody when Joe Biden became president. I always feel that the presidency is like, so all 300 million plus Americans are passengers on an airplane of sorts, right? The president and the vice president is the captain, the co-captain of the plane. I will always, you know, even though I may not have voted for the individual that became president, I will always support and be positive towards what their plans are. And I always want them to succeed. Why? Because it's in my best interest as an American citizen and in our country's best interest that whoever is the president, they succeed. That being said, we all know what the presidency looks like. We've all been through it. I don't know why the left say people are losing their rights, people left and right, because that's not the case, period. You can still be married to whoever you want to marry, still worship whatever God you want to worship. Or not worship, you could still, freedom still reigns.
Currently.
But I will say, hold on, I'm not done with the fourth. And yes, Trump is going about a different thing. Because what we've seen for the last 4 years, ever since President-elect Trump became former President Trump, was 4 years of what I believe to be politically motivated and targeted attacks, both in the media and by the courts. Now, I do believe in justice. I do believe that everyone has a day in court. But it's just funny how that's, as Trump began the process to become the Republican nominee, everything started ramping up as far as courts and the media talking crap about him and all that. But that being said, that's just what happens every 4 years when we have a presidential election. Now, what I would wish is that both sides, and yes, I will say both sides spat bullshit. The left saying that he's a Hitler and that he's a danger to America and must be killed.
Which,
in my opinion, contributed to the three assassinations. No, and you look out there, and like, I'm not saying it's prominent DC people. But there are people that are highly respected left-wingers that would love to see Donald Trump dead. Because even after the 20th, it was announced that Trump became president-elect Trump, Musk had death threats, Swami had death threats, Trump was gathered.
So did every single politician that was a Democrat.
Oh, yeah, of course. What I'm saying, though, is the difference between every other politician is Trump's already had three shots at. And that's the other thing. So all I'm saying is that we know of. Every president could have that we know of. But all I'm saying is that the fact is, right, is that we have a president that wants to put America first. He wants to wants us to get out of some bad deals. And yes, if me personally, in myself, did I think we did our part in the Ukraine war? Yes. We did our part, just like we did our part with Israel, Hezbollah, and Hamas. But the fact is, when you know how you end these wars? You tell Israel, hey, get your shit together. We're done paying. We're done giving you money. We're done giving you weapons. Fucking figure this out. Ukraine. They can keep going at it all day long because I'm tired of the United States wasting billions of dollars on proxy wars. But yes, I get it. we're using Russia and Iran are using Syria, and we're backing the rebels. And then Iran's backing Hamas and quote unquote the Palestinians, but it's really Hamas. And the Palestinians are crossing the crossfire. And then you have Israelites being backed by the United States. Like it's fucking kids' games.
What's the problem with
that? The American taxpayer is the one who's paying for it.
So the American taxpayer are helping fund these things, just like every other country in this world funds every other war, whether it's Russia, whether it's China, Iran. We're trying to protect democracy, whether it's here in America or throughout the entire world. So does that mean we spend money? Yes. But how many American citizens go off to these wars and die? We did fight in Iraq, which was a bad decision to get into. We did fight in Afghanistan, which was a bad decision to get into. Oh, by the way, that was a Republican party that went into those wars, right?
No, and I agree.
So guess what? We want to make sure democracy is safe. Do I agree that we should be spending? Absolutely. But I don't think we should cut spending where it's going to change the dynamics of the world or how we're going to lead. Because I guarantee you, Putin is not going to stop at the front doors of Ukraine. It's Poland that he's going to probably attack, and some other people, his bordering people. What do you think Norway got on NATO? Because they know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to try to hit the buttons. He's going to test it and see how far he can go. And believe it or not, and I'm not comparing him to Hitler, but Hitler had the same strategy of trying to conquer and divide Europe. And if you think that's not the beginning of a problem, let's see what happens in the next 4 years. Does Trump say, I'm not doing anything? I'm not going to support NATO? I'm not going to support our neighboring countries? Because guess what? The minute we stop supporting them, they're not going to support us when we need them.
So my question is this, because one thing that Avery and I could agree on was that we always agreed on lowering the funding of the defense. Because it's out of the dollar for the budget, defense is number one, which I get. But what are your thoughts? Just, I know it's a little out there. I'm just curious what your thoughts are. You know, or do you think we're spending enough on defense? Do you think the United States can afford to deduct?
I don't think we should cut defense at all. The biggest worry that we should have as a super world power is China right now. Russia's proven to be not very reliable on this war. They claim that they could have won it within a couple of weeks, and yet it's 2 years later. China was massing an industry of naval ships and trying to take over the world in Taiwan and saying that they belong to them. We need to worry about people like that. Countries like that think that America is not the strong. Yeah, guess what? We need to maintain our strength and show them that we're not chicken. We're not going to back down. Right? And I honestly think that the next administration is going to probably just pussyfoot around it and say something. It doesn't work that way. You have to play the politics correctly, or people are going to die.
So are you against proposed tariffs against China?
Absolutely. And it affects the American people.
Oh, yeah. So, it's well known that, yes. But it does incentivize American companies to build in America.
So I'm a little confused. We still got, again, minerals and everything else from all these countries to bring to America. I understand that he must have, so we can actually buy more American, but you're raising tariffs without letting Americans build yet. So Joe Biden says he's built the chips here instead of going to Taiwan and to China and to India. But we take offense when we say something like, let's build in America first and stop these exports, but let's make them pay taxes on this. Every time he says they are going to pay taxes, no, they don't pay taxes. We do.
And well, it's like our prices. Who was the last, besides Reagan, guess which president was the last America First president?
No, please indulge me. FDR. So when you're comparing FDR, just remember, FDR was dealing with World War II.
He was first dealing with the Great Depression. And then World War II, yes.
You're talking about the first FDR.
With only one.
Franklin Delano. That's the two, number two.
You're talking about Teddy Roosevelt?
Teddy Roosevelt was World War One.
No, Theodore Roosevelt was he fought with the Rough Riders during the Spanish American Mexican War. Now, the president that was during World War One was Woodrow Wilson.
This whole thing about the presidency, yes, Theodore Roosevelt, actually, who was president in the early 1900s, didn't really deal with the Great Recession. It was Woodrow Wilson. If I'm not mistaken, it was the Great Depression of
1929. No, as someone who's a history buff, just to help you out, right? I am younger than you, buddy. So if it helps, I don't know when we're going to teach you back in the day, but I dabble in history. I love history. But essentially, as far as the timeline, so you had Woodrow Wilson with World War One, which was 1914 to 1917. Then after that, the Great Black Tuesday happened, Spanish flu, which was similar to what everyone kept referring to with COVID because all soldiers were coming home, international travel, yada, yada, yada. Then we had a little bit of a boom era, and then 1929, the stock market crashed, and FDR was elected due to his policy ideas of putting America first to get Americans out of the Great Depression. Now, how did FDR do this? So just a little history, folks, for everybody else. So a lot of countries, what they did was they cut their military spending. And that's where, like, to nothing. That's why, for example, why Hitler and the Nazis were able to overtake Europe, because a lot of people countries didn't have standard armies or modern tech, because they cut military spending in order to create their country-specific programs to bring their countries and citizens out of the Depression. So, for example, the United States, the Great New Deal, we cut defense spending to nothing. That's why when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, we were decimated by them. We had old tech, they had new tech, things like that. And so FDR lasts in three-term president, but still FDR was only able to accomplish that through America First policies. So that's what I'm saying. But just because a country wants to be America First is not necessarily the worst idea. But yes, after decades of entangling ourselves on the international stage, have we become the parent to all nations or to all foreign states? Yes, we have. But I feel like the United States has overextended ourselves to the point where we have to bankroll people. We have to bankroll countries. We give billions of dollars every year in forms of aid. We give out $1 billion a year for membership of treaties to our nations, contribute to NATO defense and things like that. So all I'm just trying to say is that it's not the worst thing to have an American president who wants to put America first. I get it. Because the reason why the Democrats lost the 2024 election, besides the incompetency of the DNC chair not trying to get Biden to say, no, don't do it again, let's go find someone else, and then someone from Ms. Harris. Now we have a president who is chosen by the people that the Democratic Party did not listen to, which are people that are tired of working two jobs and they can't afford to buy groceries because the grocery store prices keep going up. People can't even buy a house anymore.
You know, that does happen.
Part of the housing market issue is because large corporations are buying property and outbidding first-time home buyers. I agree with that. I think what the government should do is stop that shit. Because it's not right. It's not fair. But it doesn't help either that migrants are getting free hotels, free apartments to live in, for free on American taxpayer dimes when there were properties that were designed to help alleviate housing market issues that, for example, in Maine, you can find it on YouTube video on Maine. These migrants were interviewed by a local news station. They're like, yeah, these apartments are built. They get to live there for 2 years for free. You don't have to pay anything, no utilities, no nothing. It comes fully furnished. But those apartments were originally made for the assist with Maine's housing crisis. But anyways, I went all over the place. I appreciate you all staying for the ride on that one. Okay. So anyways, Anthony, go back to you.
Yeah, I don't know which topic I should talk about first. But let's go back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and, you know, the Great New Deal and how we're building the infrastructure and everything else. These are presidents that actually made a difference in America because they built America. Wow. Yes, we went through horrible wars and we created NATO. Do you know who created NATO and why they created NATO?
So I know that NATO was founded after World War One.
World War II.
Oh, it's World War II? Yep. Okay, so NATO was founded in World War II and it was founded by... I know Russia.
Nope.
No, you're right. No, it was basically the Allies minus the Soviet Union.
Yeah, but there was one particular America that started the United Nations and NATO. When Rockefeller decided that he wanted to make sure that there was peace in the world, he created the UN. And he got all the countries to agree to come in.
Yes, but he believed that himself. He believed, even though Rockefeller was a conglomerate and a monopolist, he did believe in world peace. And that's why that was created. So if you get somebody like him that brought all these nations together and they said, we want you to spend X amount of money on the military to make sure that we can keep our democratic thoughts and processes alive through the world. And we will safeguard you from any tyrants that are out there. Now, granted, GDP back then, is a lot different than it is now. They never spent as much as us when it comes to funding NATO, but there's a benefit for being in NATO also.
NATO, besides trade and things like that, it's also if someone attacked one member of NATO, it's going to attack on all.
Correct.
Now, but it goes back to the thing with, yes, I understand the purpose of NATO and I want the United States to stay a part of NATO. But all I'm just saying is that if we have a isolationism. See, I'm not asking, saying, oh, let's be isolationists, like pre-World War II. I'm not saying that.
No, we want to cut funding, though.
No, it would be impossible to become isolationist. Because
okay, we agree on that.
In order for the United States to become an isolationist country, we would have to slowly get there. Like, the only reason why the United States would become isolationist before World War II was because the entire world economy collapsed to nothing. So as a result, that's the only way you could do it, which we can't do now, because if the United States will come in a country of isolationism, then we would totally screw up the world economy and there'll be another Black Tuesday.
Okay, so if we start doing what people want to do and cut back all these budgets and everything else, I agree with you. We do need to cut back. But when you cut it back so drastically to the point where people will not have jobs or where countries are going to fall apart because something that we did, we got to rethink the whole process. We just can't say, let's shut our doors and we're not going to send money overseas to help them. Because there's a benefit for the United States for them to see us as an ally. It makes no sense for us not to spend the money to make sure that they're part of us. Because guess what? Russia, China, Iran, Brazil, guess what they all have in common? Getting together, and they're gonna start dictating what's going to happen in the world. They're going to try to create their own monetary funds, and they're going to become the next big superpower. So it won't be called NATO, it'll be called something else.
No, but do you understand why the American people would want an American first president?
No, I understand, but President Trump is not America first. He's business first. He's about his money. He's about his rich people's money.
when he starts doing things for the people, I will look at him differently. So instead of giving the tax breaks to all the billionaires and businesses and raising our taxes, then I'll look at him differently.
So, real quick question, because obviously I didn't know you when Trump was president. So my question to you is, during the Trump presidency, did you feel you had more money in your pocket?
I feel I have. It was a different world back then.
It's just a yes or no. Yes or no.
Yeah, it's not a simple yes or no question. Because he was president during COVID. And before that.
COVID.
But the world before that was great. And we're living in a world past COVID, post-COVID. So we're dealing with all the chaos that ensued.
Okay, so let me be more specific then. So before COVID, as Donald Trump, as your president, did you feel like you had more spending power? Did you or did you not take more money home before
COVID? If COVID did not exist, we would be in the same situation the 2 years prior.
If COVID did not exist, Donald J. Trump would have been
okay. There's a good possibility of that also. But keep in mind, we were already in good shape before he took office. The first 2 years that he was in office, yes, the stock market did phenomenal. Everything was going according to plan, right? That's what he wanted. But COVID came and he took missteps that caused all the problems that's happening today.
I agree with you.
So all this inflation that's happening, it's a very cyclical thing. It doesn't repair itself in 4 years, 2 years, or 8 years.
I'm not expecting the economy to heal itself just because Trump's president. The government works slow. It does not work fast. Things have to be put in place. Pauses have to be done. But what I'm trying to state is that one thing that we saw post-COVID is that even though COVID is, you know, everything's calmed down, you do have companies that are taking advantage still, where they're marking up everything thousands of percent. For example, an iPhone, I believe what the statistic was, an iPhone is cost Apple $100 per phone to manufacture in China, but then here in the United States, post-production and everything, it's retailing over $1,000. So that's just where you're taking advantage of the American people. Legally, can the government step in and say, oh, no, you can't do that, and try to make them do it where they lower their product price or natural goods?
You do remember that we're a capitalist country, right?
Yeah, we are.
So we make things, we invent things, if people want to make as much money as possible. So we're very capitalistic. Trump is very capitalistic as well, right? He'll take advantage of anything and make sure that he gets as much money as possible. So if we decide as Americans to spend money on a phone that costs $1,000, guess what? That's on you. That's on me. That's on
everybody. No, I agree. But let me ask you this, though, right? Like raw resources, such as unclean vegetables, food and grocery store, things like that. Do you feel that it's right that they're marking up the goods? And I'm not talking about the farmers. Not the farmers doing it.
No, actually, believe it or not, companies. It's the entire process that's causing the problem. Because when it comes to the farmers, can't get the goods, they can't get the machinery, they can't get the fuel because the fuel is so high. Everything has a systemic effect, no matter what the industry is, whether it's food, produce, meat, it doesn't matter. It's going to have an impact no matter what. Because everything's driven up so high, inflation is going to take precedent over deflation. So those prices are never going to come down fast enough unless Americans and the world stop saying, I'm not paying this anymore. Let's go back to the old days where surplus means a surplus and the prices are reduced. That right now where everything's so damn tight that you're willing to pay extra money to get something. We tend to want things and we don't need it. Okay. So we drive prices up. When Americans stop spending money like that, and they start bringing the prices down, then they'll benefit. But that's capitalism at its best, and it's worse at the same time.
So I'm assuming a lot of folks at home, and like I said, this is our first episode doing this. So I know we're a little bit all over the place a bit, but I'm trying to also have the audience gauge where you stand. For example, with Avery, after years of doing this, they know where he stands. What kind of Democrat on you?
for David was a far left a year ago, Democratic Socialist. So I'm just curious, Anthony, and I know it's like a little weird and we'll get back to the topic, just something to tell the audience. What kind of Democrat are you? Or are you even a full Democrat at all?
I'm not really a full-blown Democrat, but I'm more of an independent Democrat.
Okay, so that's another one, folks. Anthony and I, you're going to see that Anthony and I could agree more or less, because I like Avery, not to talk shit. Love you, brother, if you're listening to this.
Leave him on.
But Anthony and I are both independents, but Anthony is a Democratic independent, more left-leaning, and I'm a Republican independent, more right-leaning. So we're not really Democrat or Republican, left or right. We're both in the center, which I feel a lot of Americans are finding themselves, especially when you look at this year's presidential election. A lot of third-party members were voted, like Joe Stein, RFK Jr., God help us all, which, like, for example, we both agree that I feel like he is a terrible choice for his position in the Trump cabinet. So, Anthony, you'll find Anthony and I agree on a lot of things. But we also highly disagree on a lot of things as well, especially when it comes to Trump.
Yeah, especially when it comes to
Trump. So at least for 4 years, we and Anthony are going to have a lot of talk and disagreements.
Exactly. We will never see eye to eye on everything, but we will have some common grounds, no doubt about it.
Now, one thing that is current event and it's currently happening that I just wanted to brush up a little bit before we end this podcast is, obviously, Anthony, we know what happened in our neck of the woods with the UnitedHealthcare CEO being gunned down by an unknown assailant. This, I feel, is going to bring up a lot of healthcare issues, and I really want to brush up on that as well with you in our next episode. What are your thoughts about UnitedHealthcare CEO being brutally murdered in the streets of New York City?
I really feel bad for the family that has to deal with this. Sometimes companies don't make the right decisions for people's personal well-being, and people take it very personal. They think that corporation is all about the bottom line. It's a sore topic because you're putting people's lives at risk just to make online all the time or exceed billions of dollars. It is a very touchy topic. What they did was unnecessary. There's better means of communicating. Killing somebody is not the way to go, whether it's the CEO or the president of the country. You have to be more civil to make.
But I'll agree with you and as well, prayers and forth with the family. Because at the end of the day, everyone's quick to blame a CEO for a company's policies, but everyone forgets that the CEO is just one person. There's a whole cog of individuals that make policies. And the CEO is essentially just ahead of it all, but that doesn't necessarily mean they know every single thing that happens, especially in a healthcare company like UnitedHealthcare. There are things that happen, there are things that don't happen that a CEO may or may not know. It's impossible for an individual that level to possibly know what every single person that works for his company does and says, what decisions they make. So it's terrible what's happened. I hope that this doesn't become a trend because, yes, the American healthcare system is something that has been terrible. And something that, when Avery and I started this, I was one of those people. I was like, oh, healthcare. But the fact, though, is that I really, now that I, my family, myself, me utilizing healthcare more, I just realized the first how frustrating it is. For example, part of the reason why we were on hiatus last year is because I had to get vocal cord surgery and I had to get that repaired. I had 2 health insurances at the time. And even though I had 2 health insurances, I still had a bill at the end of it, which is crazy to me. And there's people out there that don't have health insurance. Mm-hmm. And I do believe affordable health care is something that is every American's right. I do. But what I feel like the problem is that healthcare can be affordable. The problem, though, is it starts with Big Pharma jacking up the prices. And I will tell everybody, I hate Big Pharma. I hate it. Because EpiPens should be affordable. In some places in the world, it's $25. In the United States, it's over $600. I think that's changed since then. But I'm just throwing out numbers here. But essentially, that was like an example of us versus the rest of the world.
No, I agree with that statement. But the one thing that I'm gonna call out on this, and this is every single politician out there, when the lobbyists stop dictating what's best for us, then we'll be a little bit better off. These lobbyists are fighting for these companies, and these companies are gonna do whatever it takes to spend money in whatever political arena to make sure they hit their views. And so Big Pharma is one of them. Healthcare systems is another one. They all look out for themselves as opposed to looking out for the people. Yes, I do agree that they need to make money. They don't need to rip us off blind, though. That's my biggest problem.
And that's why, in my personal belief, besides that, there should be term limits for a senator in Congress.
Oh, I agree. And I think there should be term limits for the Supreme Court also. As you can see what's happening, it's either one side or the other.
Just because some of these laws and rules and things that are being passed, you shouldn't have a dinosaur who's so disconnected from their constituents be leading because they don't understand. And you see that with some of these hearings we saw with Mark Zuckerberg was on, when Tim was on, being interviewed and interrogated by some committees and from Congress. Same with the TikTok CEO. It's just laughable. But besides that, lobbyists should... My view is always this. If you take any money, any bribery, you go to jail. That's it. Can lobbyism be a thing? Yes, I think it can. But there can't be any exchange of... There can't be any quid pro quo, period. Like, if you're doing a PowerPoint implementation as to why, for example, I should make weed illegal, marijuana illegal in my state, then yeah, I can sit down and listen to a presentation. But if you're like, hey, dude, here's some $200 million, just say yes and vote yes for the weed bill. Same with, I'm just saying weed, marijuana as an example, but we see it with Big Pharma, Big Oil, even with tax companies such as AMG and Allblock. Guess what, folks? You don't really need to file taxes. Scam. The government technically already knows what you owe.
So basically, you probably, I don't know if you're going to agree with me or disagree with me, but Clarence Thomas, all those nice little gifts that he's got.
I agree. He should be.
Those are bribes.
No, I agree. He should be prosecuted. There should be no Supreme Court justice taking any sort of bribery or anything like that. See, and that's the thing, because originally I grew up hard Republican. Like, that's how I grew up. Hardcore, like, not racist or homophobic or nothing like that. It's the right, it's Republican way, that's it. Now I'm more independent, because mostly my right leanings is economical. But I agree that any political, for example, what's happening with the mayor of New York City, and the governor of New York State. I am glad that the federal government is investigating them. And Clarence Thomas should be investigated and removed as well. But one thing that I think you'll find interesting, Anthony, and I know folks were a little bit towards the end, just sliding through some brief conversation. But these are the topics that we're going to build off. For example, Mayor Adams all of a sudden is doing a 360 ever since the 2024 election. I didn't know if you noticed that.
Oh, yeah, no.
But now he's not a 360, where he's, oh, we don't have any more money, but stop funding. We're not giving food stamps to the migrants anymore. We're not going to house them. Like, all of a sudden, he's, oh, I agree with the border czar that Trump appointed. I want to meet him. It just screams, hey, Mr. President Trump, I want you to
back me.
It's whatever the wind is blowing, they think they're going on.
But mind you, this was an Obama, a gentleman who worked for the Obama administration. You know that, right?
The ultimately works for Obama. He's an individual who has his own mind and his own thoughts. What he's
But
he, as an individual, to be held accountable for his actions. It has nothing to do with the Obama administration. Him personally, just a poor judge of character and morals.
No, exactly. But my question to you as we end this episode, because mainly just to recap, folks, we introduced Anthony, new co-host of Political Brothers, as well as all separate podcasts that we are going to get started relatively soon about electric vehicles, being an owner, living a life, what we miss about gas cars, we don't miss it at all, and how much it costs, and doing some education on that. And yes, I did not mispronounce the education. I just, edumacation just sounds better. But the fact is that we did that. We spoke a little bit about why we felt the 2024 election went the way it went. About we were dabbled into a lot of other little things as well. So my question to you, Anthony, is what are your hope? What is something that you hope President Trump can accomplish for the 4 years that he's in office?
The one thing that I'm hoping on, that's not about him, that he's about the people, about doing right for the middle class and the poor. The rich are always going to have their money. They're always going to have their things on their side. So if he wants to be the real president for the American people, look at everybody, not one classification of the people. If he can do that, he just might persuade me to listen more towards the right. But I don't think that's going to happen. There's too many far right people that have extreme thoughts.
So what I would say is I am in total agreement with you. I hope and pray that Trump does not make these next 4 years all about him. I hope that the economy is improved. The housing crisis that we're moving towards is fixed, as well as everything's more affordable at the grocery store. I also hope the migrant problem is resolved and that we can get money, taxpayer dollars, going back to taxpayers. And like I said, I'm not a person that believes in, that does not believe in immigration. I love immigration. But the problem, though, is it's a ban presidents that the Biden administration has caused. It is what is. Trump's the future. And we'll see what happens. And then you also have to wonder of what's going to happen after Trump's done. Because this is his last 4 years. J.D. Vance set up to take the throne and begin a Republican era of another years.
Let's not put that man on the pedestal yet.
Can I tell everybody here, check out Hillbilly Elegy. Very good movie and it's a very good read. Anyways, Anthony, congrats on your first episode, first of many. We're going to take it slow, folks. Probably put out one episode a week until Anthony and I schedules sync and as we navigate this new style of Political Brothers. But tune in to next week when we talk about some of the topics we did not get into, but we're going to dive more into healthcare. We're going to talk a little bit more into J.D. Vance, who Anthony really, really loves. And for the first time in his career with Political Brothers, take it away, Anthony.
Well, I do appreciate this opportunity with Chauncey letting me take over Avery's spot. Looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to some of the comments that are going to be out there. Until next time. Now don't you fall asleep on me.